Welcome to Gospel Tangents. I'm your host, Rick Bennett. Please consider donating or purchasing a transcript by going to our website, gospeltangents.com/shop. You'll help support other documentaries and podcasts such as this. Welcome to part two of our discussion on the Kirtland banking scandal. In 1837 and 1838, nearly one-third of all banks in the United States failed. Kirtland Safety Society was one of those banks. What were the causes for its failure? Was Joseph Smith really responsible, or were there other reasons that might have caused the bank's collapse? We'll answer these questions with Dr. Mark Staker, an LDS anthropologist at the Church History Library. Let's listen into our conversation.
Very quickly, however, they run into trouble. It's still that chartering is not all resolved itself, and it leaves them in legal limbo because a bank needs to have a charter, although all these other institutions don't. They want to operate as a bank rather than as a, you know, the local credit union, rather than as kind of an issuing organization that issues promissory notes, which are all over the place. While that charter is still kind of out in limbo, one of those local opponents of theirs, Grandison Newell, he wants to put the bank out of commission. And so he goes up and buys up all of the banknotes he can buy. And he comes in and he asks for specie, which is the hard currency, gold and silver coins rather than the paper notes. And the bank has to trade for those, and so all of its currency, all of its specie that's in the coffers of the bank, it's in its vault, they're trading out to Grandison Newell, and he's trying to create a run on the bank. And the way those work is if the way a run happens is if everybody that has banknotes comes in and wants to hard currency from the bank, eventually it won't have enough because there are more notes out than there is hard currency, and it can't cover for everybody. But as long as everybody has faith in the bank, it'll continue to work properly. The thing about paper money is it always requires faith. If you don't believe in it, it doesn't work. If I don't think that that dollar bill in my wallet is worth anything, and nobody else believes it's worth anything, it's not. It's just paper. It's only when everybody believes that it's worth something that it becomes worth something. So, you know, as long as everybody believes the banknotes are worth something, they are. But as Grandison Newell continued to push forward to try to create this run on the bank, well, people began to worry about it. Is he going to be successful? Is this going to fail as an institution? Well, one of the families that owned most of the bank stock was the Johnson family, led by their father, Johnson, John Johnson Sr. But he had his sons, Luke and Lyman Johnson, were both apostles. A son-in-law, Orson Hyde, was an apostle. A nephew by marriage, William McClellan, was an apostle.
William McClellan? Or another one?
Yeah, isn't it William McClellan? Yeah. I had to think. Yeah. Okay, right. He's one of the first. Okay, yeah. So William McClellan, Orson Hyde, Lyman Johnson, Luke Johnson are all either sons-in-law or a nephew by marriage of John Johnson Sr. And so he's very much tied into this community, has a lot of influence. He's been given responsibility for the property, to sell all that property that's in Kirtland. He had sold his own farm and apparently consecrated all that property, the finances from his sale, to the church. And in exchange, he received the responsibility to sell the property in Kirtland from the Peter French farm. Now, probably, but it's not clear in the record, probably his money from his sale had gone to help buy that Peter French farm. But however his money had gone, it might have gone to help with Kirtland Camp, it might have gone to help with other things. He had responsibility for the Peter French farm and to sell that property. He, John Johnson Sr., loses faith in this whole Kirtland Safety Society enterprise. Why? Don't know. Was there a specific incident? Did Joseph Smith insult him? Did he see something that he didn't trust in terms of a financial document? Did he, you know, whatever. Whatever it was, John Johnson Sr. panics and he goes out and begins to immediately sell this property at giveaway prices. He's giving it to his sons, son-in-law, family members, also some of his friends and associates and others. He's getting rid of this property because he wants to be able to get what he can out of it all. That property would have supported the bank. If the bank had collapsed, the property would have been there in place as one of the resources for the bank. If Grandis and Newell had gotten all the specie out, they could have sold that property and then continued to give him coin. But because John Johnson's out divesting himself of all his property, one of the major sources of collateral for the bank is also disappearing, along with the other one, which is the gold and silver coin. Because of that, the whole foundation on which the Kirtland Bank is built begins to crumble. There isn't any more support behind those banknotes, and as long as there's and as that support dissolves, faith in the banknotes also begins to dissolve. And people began to all rush in, just as Grandis and Newell had hoped, and began to demand payment on the banknotes. And as they do that, the value of the notes drops to where they become virtually worthless. Nobody will accept them in trade. You can't buy anything with them, and you're left with very little to accomplish anything with. So, by this all happens over a couple of months period of time. By June 9th of 1837, Joseph Smith realizes that the bank just can't continue to survive. By that time, John Johnson's pulled out. They're struggling. It's still operating as an institution. But Joseph Smith publishes in the paper that he no longer supports the institution. He withdraws from it. Some of his associates still think that they can make it all work, and they continue on. The principal one being Warren Parrish, who had been one of Joseph's scribes. He's also worked as the in the bank, signing Joseph's notes for him and trying to managing day-to-day operations as the teller. And as the bank teller, back then you were responsible for all of the ins and outs of the money coming into the institution. And so Warren Parrish continues the institution. And what he does, apparently, is he takes banknotes that have been redeemed, and he then begins to take those out and circulate them again. Even though people have come and gotten their money for those notes, and Brigham Young is one of those who says that he's redeemed his note, and he finds it out again in circulation. And it's not, banknotes back then weren't like dollar bills today, where you take a dollar and it's worth the same for everybody. It's like a promissory note, an IOU. And so once it's redeemed and canceled. More notes are issued. And so if those notes are going out again, once they've been redeemed, that's as though they've never been redeemed. And you keep holding that debt plus new debt that's out. And so these notes are all are going out into circulation, into the community, to where it's building more and more debt because the bank has to now pay for more and more notes that are out there, and eventually it collapses as an institution, And everybody that's holding those banknotes is holding worthless paper.
So let me make sure I understand. So you said Brigham Young, he got a banknote saying he owed money to the bank for $100, whatever it was. And then he paid off that $100, let's say, and then they didn't cancel the note, they just reissued it to someone else? Is that what you said?
Yeah, when you go get a loan from that bank, you know, at that time period, you'd get a loan and you'd say to the Kirtland Safety Society, I want to borrow $200 so I can buy this land, plant my crops, and I will pay back, you know, $100 this year and $100 next year plus 8% interest. So I'll, you know, pay you back $216 by the end of, you know, half of it this year and half next year. And in exchange, you give them then the bank notes, and they've got to pay you back from those notes, from other notes, from hard currency over those two-year periods. They've got to pay back for those bank notes. Those bank notes then are exchangeable, that you can pass them out to people.
The farmer has to pay back.
The farmer has to pay back to the bank what he's borrowed, that right. $216.
And so he gets a bank note in return.
He gets $200 in banknotes now that he can go out and buy his seed, buy his land, make his land payment if he can't buy all the land, but he can then buy seed and hire some workers to help him to earn enough money to then meet his payments. And so that banknote then represents a loan from the bank that he's got to pay back. And if somebody like Brigham Young then gets that note and they go put it into the bank because they're investing in the bank, or Brigham Young paints the house of the farmer. And so the farmer gives him $25 out of that loan that he got. Brigham Young takes that Kirtland note and he takes it back to the bank, deposits it in and says, you know, this is my $25 for my account. Then the bank has that money in that's been redeemed. That note now is gone, but the bank owes Brigham Young $25 of specie eventually, or could give him another bank note or whatever, but that note's been redeemed. So that original farmer has used that in some transactions, and it then ends up back in the bank, which would then it would be crossed out. But the debts that the farmer owes and the debt that the Safety Society owes to Brigham Young are both still on the books that need to be resolved with some kind of a bank notes over time. It could be a Geauga County bank note that they pay with. It could be hard currency that the federal government's publishing, printing. The federal government's not printing any paper money at this time. They're just doing the hard currency. Or it could be more Safety Society notes to kind of keep that loan floating, which they could do as well so that they don't have to kind of redeem it all over time. But as it all collapses, all, you know, and everybody wants their money in, and the people who got the debts aren't going to go back and pay, then it all falls apart.
Okay. All right. So that makes sense. You described the economics very well there.
I hope you enjoyed our discussion. In our third and final segment on the Kirtland banking crisis, we'll finish our conversation with LDS anthropologist Dr. Mark Staker. Why did Joseph take the brunt of the blame?
Whether of guilt or compassion for everybody else or whatever, he begins to take on the debts of all these individuals who've been using money at that time. Now, did that exonerate Joseph for operating the institution without a bank charter? Well, no, because he ended up being tried for it and convicted.
We hope you'll come back and listen to part two. Click here to subscribe, click here for a transcript, and over here you'll see some other videos that we've done here on YouTube. We hope you'll use this as a valuable resource to learn more about Mormon history.